You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
That's right, my listeners. It's back again this season. And this year, I'll be mixing in some very special episodes because we're celebrating the top figures who have defined this incredible league over the past 20 years. Find out right here how these great teams and great players have become the kings of Europe. Stay tuned and download because, as you know, no subject is out of bounds on The Crossover. Hello, my fellow podcasters. Welcome back to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. And I'm so happy that you downloaded this podcast because it's one that I've been looking forward to since my next guest this summer signed with AX Armani Exchange Milan. I've completed 8 interviews this year so far, the regular crossover and the 20th anniversary. And this one is the one that I've had the most pleasure to sit down with. It's the first time I've had a coach this year, not just any coach. I'm sharing the mic today with one of the greatest. That should be enough hints, as I'm sure you can guess who it is. 9 visits to the Final Four, and he's back after 5 years as San Antonio Spurs assistant coach, Mr. Ettore Messina. Coach, how are you?
Doing good, Joe. How are you?
Doing good.
Good to see you.
Yeah. First of all, I'm going to ask you straight up for your forgiveness before we start. Just in case, you've done so much in this sport over not that big of a period of time that if I forget something or if it's misplaced, you're not gonna go all Greg Popovich on me, are you?
No, don't worry.
good. I found out that you were from Catania. It's one of my favorite areas in Italy.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I went last year. I went there, or 2 years ago. I wanted to go back last year. I love Catania, but I love Marina Ragusa and all that area.
That's very, very uncommon that people visit.
I love it. It's the food, the culture, the people. It's one of my favorite. And I didn't go back this summer, and I'm dying. Is that still home for you?
No. We moved when I was 5. My father was an attorney for the public administration. So to pursue his own career, we moved to Venice. And that's where I grew up, Venice and Mestre. You know, they're tied by the bridge, like Oakland and
San Francisco. Yeah.
And I grew up there. I played there with Rayer Venezia. I start coaching there with Rayer Venezia. And I finished my college there at the University of Ca' Foscari. And then I start moving in 82, I went to Udine as an assistant coach. But my roots are there.
How with all the stuff that I looked up on you, that I could find anyways, how did you get into coaching? You didn't play that much.
No.
What was your path?
It's funny that you make that question because 2 days ago, we were in Venice and we played Rayer Venezia.
Right, that was after the last game.
Yes.
And a little bit of travel.
And my former coach, the one I was a player, was there. Okay, so this guy is named Renato Vianello, as probably your high school coach or your college coach, had a great influence on me. I mean, I really admire the way he carried himself, came to practice, taught us basketball, whatever. So I'm 16, 17, and even if I'm playing, I'm helping another coach with the BD basketball team, the mini basket team of Rayer Venezia.
While you're playing?
Yes. Okay. I'm going to school, and in my free time, I'm either playing or helping in the gym. Okay. Head coach of the team, of the professional team in Venice, is Tonino Zorzi, a legend in
the game. Yeah, okay? I remember the name.
And he's also my PE physical education teacher in school, because back then coaches did not have just the
right.
You know, they were doing something else. So, long story short, my last game, I was just a decent guard, but I was a very good shooter. So, final for the regionals, we're playing home. Time expires, I get fouled. We're down 1. I miss the 2 free throws. Okay, it happens. I'm devastated. The day after, Coach Zorzi calls me in his office at school, and he just gives me a brainwash. He tells me how bad I was, I could miss 2 free throws, how a coward I was. I mean, it was, believe me, I could have committed suicide. And at the end, he says, listen, you're not going to be a player. You're not good enough. I said, thank you, coach. But I saw you in the gym with the young kids, and I think you can become a good coach. So if you agree, you can quit playing. I was 17.
You were 17.
Yes, you can stop playing and we'll pay for your education. You know that like in Spain, in Italy, right. You need to go through education, courses and clinics, yep. and whatever, which is also expensive. So we'll pay for everything and we'll put you to coach.
Your coaching education, your license.
Your license and whatever. So I thought about that 2 days. And I said, you know what? Let's go. Let's do it. And that's how he started.
I've heard so many people, so many coaches that were okay players that did that. They decided that while they're, I think Coach Blatt did that. David Blatt was also.
But he played in college. He managed to play in college.
He played at Princeton and he went on. Yeah. But even when he was coaching or when he was playing in
Israel.
Tel Aviv in Israel, he was coaching the younger team.
But you know, Joe, one thing, to these days, and it might sound stupid because I had a great career. I was very, very lucky. I somehow regret that decision. I miss the plane so much.
I was going to ask you that.
I miss it so much.
Even now.
Yeah. But you make
decisions at that point of your life because you think they're right.
I know, but that was a coincidence. How can you say that your decision at 17 was, you know, you do it instinctively, probably, okay?
Yeah.
And now, even now, before every practice, while my players stretch, I shoot. I can't stop doing that.
Really?
Yes. I mean, I missed the experience of having been a player. And not a great player, because it would have been a great player. I would have never played like you in a Final Four or in a championship game or whatever. Never. But just playing. I miss it.
But the point guard coach thing is kind of goes hand in hand sometimes.
True.
Because they know so much about the game.
Yes, you
know,
you're right. It should be like this.
Yeah, because you don't see very big men like me being successful coaches.
Not true.
There's a few, but looking at your eyes and you need to think hard.
Yeah, you're right.
You grew up at the same time I grew up. You're a little bit older than I am.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Italy was the heyday of it was the place to be for basketball.
Absolutely.
Back in the
absolutely
as an American, the only thing I ever knew about European basketball was Bob McAdoo went to Milan and he became then of course Ricky Brown who I played with.
Sure, perfect.
It's amazing. I was looking at all the because of all the research I've been doing in from when you won your first title in 97 until I think it was 2003. Italy was actually represented in the Final Four by 12 different times, four different teams.
Yes, yes.
Is this how you got addicted to the game? Is it watching these guys play and the fact that this league was so intense and so wonderful? I mean, I played in Caserta, and I saw everything. It was so great. It was incredible.
I remember. Which years did you play in Caserta?
I played 3 months, and they got rid of me because I was too good.
Unbelievable. When did it happen?
I played there, I left Sacramento in 88, so it was 88, 89.
I was an assistant. I was still my last year as an assistant.
Okay. In what team?
In Bologna. I was an assistant to Bob Hill, and then he left the year after, and I took over. It was, to me, more than the 80s, when I was already coaching. I coached against McAdoo. I coached against Ricky Brown. Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I started my first season as a coach, as a head coach, was 89-90 with Virtus Bologna, okay? Yeah. But my day, in the late 70s, when we had players that you might not remember, like Steve Hose, Bob Morse, you know, like those players.
Those were the pioneers.
Mike D'Antoni started to come at the end of the 80s, of the 70s. Those were teams. It was really fun. And I remember very well my weekdays. I remember like if it's yesterday, Iñis Varese playing Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. Or Iñis Varese played Cesca in the in the cup in the what it was called the Champions Cup, okay,
right.
The finals. You know, Varese played 10 straight finals. Can you believe that?
We beat them in the Italian Cup. My I was there for 3 months.
I remember.
Courtney Thompson. And
I remember
Jay
in Bologna. The game was in Bologna. I was there watching the game. Yes,
we,
I remember.
We beat them in a crazy game. When I think of your career and everything that you've done, I think, have you ever read the book Outliers?
Yes.
You've read the book?
I read it in English, in Spanish because Fabrizio Berto gave it to me.
He gave it to
Fabrizio
you.
Mano gave it to me.
And I'm going to read this off as I wrote it down. The author was Malcolm Gladwell. I read it many, many years ago. And just so people understand what this is that while I'm talking about it, the book it deals with cultural and societal forces that give rise to opportunistic individuals. Right? Essentially, what he tried to say is that people aren't lucky. That people just don't get lucky to be successful. Mm-hmm. They have to put time into things.
Well, that's for sure.
And I see his big thing was based on 10,000 hours. It was like, if you put 10,000 hours into something, then you'll be successful. And the people that he used as his examples were the Beatles, Howard Stern, Michael Jordan, you know, people who were Wayne Gretzky, the greatest of their sport. Or the, and I think you fit into that because you started so young as a coach. Like you said, at 17, your guy pulls you over. How many hours do you think you've put into this game?
Well, I loved it and still love it so much that it's a 24 hours a day. You always think, you always think basketball, your team, your something, maybe a play, whatever. But I would like to add one thing to what you said. I think a lot has to see, to go with the opportunity, somebody giving you an opportunity. Let me rephrase this. I had a crazy guy that decided to help me become a coach, Tonino Zorzi. Then, and he gave me a team of 14 and under. How can you give a team of 14 and under to a 17 years old coach? That's stupid.
That's my first thought.
That's stupid. Okay, yeah. So but he did it.
You're a kid coaching kids.
Yeah. Then when I'm 23, Avvocato Porelli in Bologna, the Raimundo Saporta of Virtus Bologna, offers me a contract to be the assistant coach, and more important, to coach all the youth teams. And in 89, they appoint me as the head coach. And then...
Were you ready? Did you feel like you were ready?
No, I was not. of course, I couldn't be ready, but my first year, we won the Cup of Cup. You know, that was the unlucky and sad year for Madrid when they lost Fernando.
So we
played the final game with them, and we beat them. And they had a very good team, but that was
a big loss.
Awful year, of course, okay, for them. And we won the Italy Cup, blah, blah, blah. So 2 years after, we win the national championship, blah, blah, blah. At 33, they put me as the head coach of the national team.
Right.
And I'm so stupid to accept all this, but it's opportunity. Then you say, okay, you were, you had the opportunity. So it's a combination. If nobody gives, I really believe there are a lot of people in my profession that are very, very good, and they, for some reason, they have never been given the opportunity.
I've said the same thing about my career over many years. I said, I've played against and with so many players that were probably better than I was, playing-wise, and they just didn't have that opportunity. That they didn't get lucky.
That goes to your credit. It's a general manager or a coach who takes the decision for you, or maybe sometimes you're playing and you're rival gets, is injured. Now, all of a sudden, boom, you play, you perform, boom. How many careers? Think about Pat Riley.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy, what was his name? The coach that, or Paul Weston. His head coach goes with a motorbike and with a bicycle accident. Yeah. Now he's the head coach.
There's many stories.
It's all like this.
I think there's luck, but you have to be good to be lucky. You know what I'm saying?
Have to be good to deserve the opportunity that life gives you. Another story.
Yeah, that's a whole other part of it, but it's true.
It's like sometimes we all bitch because you see, oh, look at that guy. They hired him because he was sponsored by somebody. Okay. Right. You might be sponsored sometimes in life by somebody, but if you're not working hard enough, after 1 year, you lose it.
That'll run out of steam quick.
Yes, exactly.
Your first 3 years in Bologna were incredible years because you were so young still, and you did good. I want just a quick question about coaching the national team. How hard is it for a coach that's been so successful take over the national team? Because it's an opportunity of a lifetime.
Sure.
But you're not doing what you want to do every
day.
That's
exactly right.
It's the grind, the day-to-day grind is not there.
No.
How hard is that?
It was very hard, especially because I was young.
Right.
But in the same time, that gave me a unique opportunity because I had a lot of free time. In those years, I visited, a lot of great coaches. I went to watch Ivković practices, Zelimir's practices. Professor Nikolic was helping Bošatanović in Trieste. Mm-hmm. So I had I went to the States. I had the opportunity to spend time with the Bulls 1 week during training camp, with Riley, with Coach Smith. So I spent a lot of time learning. That was a great opportunity. I had the time because I grew up. And at the same time, I tried to add... back then, the national teams were playing a little bit more.
Right.
There were the windows like now. And I also took care of the under 20 team, and every year I was taking the under 20 to play the small Division I colleges in America.
Right.
So there was another part of the program that helped me. And it was, I think, a learning experience, sure.
But that day-to-day, the video every day.
I missed it a lot. Yes, you're right. Yes.
Is that why you came back for your second stint in Bologna?
Yes.
Obviously, you learned a lot because your second stint was... My thing here is like, in Hollywood, you know, the sequel is never as good as the first one, you know?
But that time was not true. Yeah.
that time it wasn't true. Yeah. Your second time around was incredible. You went and won your first EuroLeague.
Yeah, and then after 2 years, we won the second, and we had two great teams, one with Danilovic, Savic, Rigaudot, the other with Manu Ginobili, mm-hmm. Rigaudot, blah, blah, blah. So those were great years, for sure.
I think I have you down at 38 at the time, 37?
No, I was a little, in 2000, oh yeah, in 98 I was 39.
39.
When we won the first. And in 2001 I was 42.
And then you lost to Zalgiris. There was...
In 99 we lost
to Zalgiris. So there's three years in a row.
We played the final game of the EuroLeague 3 years out of four.
Right.
98, 99, and 2001.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Do you know how close we came to me being your player?
No, I didn't know that. When was that?
I didn't realize it until I did this interview.
No, I didn't know that.
In my 63-point game that I had at Buckler Bologna.
I remember very well. But Coach Bucci was coaching then. I remember. I was watching the game because I was coaching the national team of Italy.
Okay.
And you destroyed them. That was in 97.
It was in 96, I think. 96, 97.
That season, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I remember very well, vividly. Yes.
Well, before
you destroyed Zoran Savic, and I remember.
No, Zoran gave me all the balls. Zoran was on my team.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And then he came. It was Orlando Woolridge.
That's exactly right.
It was Orlando Woolridge.
That's exactly right.
Rest in peace, Orlando, big O. Yeah. The day of that game, Piero Costa,
who
was
the general
my GM,
manager.
He was my GM in Caserta.
Oh.
He signed me in Caserta. He calls me up and he says, hey, the other team from Bologna wants to sign you. And I had just finished off contract negotiations with Madrid to continue, but I didn't sign before I left.
Oh.
And he said, they're going to pay you whatever you make in Madrid and then some. And I said, look at Piero. I said, I got a big game tonight. This is for first place and the thing. I said, don't even bother me with this.
Okay, let me think about the game, yes.
I went out and scored 63, and he calls me up that night. He's like, how much do you want now? I said, I want double. And he said, okay.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, and my wife went to Bologna, met with everybody from the team, picked out an apartment.
I didn't know
that. Yeah, they picked out an apartment and everything, and I was the one that backed out of the deal. Everybody was ready to go, and I was the one that backed out of the deal. And now I think, because, you know, that was when Real Madrid started, you know. And I'm thinking, man, if I could have played for this guy, I would have won a couple more championships I could have been talking about.
It's funny because, it's amazing because during the second part of that season, mm-hmm. they let Piero go and they let Coach Bucci go. And Roberto Brunamonti, the former national team player, took mm-hmm. over for 3-4 months.
Well, Piero was an agent at that time.
Oh, was an agent, wasn't
he? Yeah, he wasn't the GM anymore.
Okay,
That's why he called.
I got it.
Because he called me for the other team I don't know if it was Virtus at the time, but it was Virtus when you arrived the following year.
Yes.
Well, I would have been on that team.
That's unbelievable.
And I don't know, maybe you wouldn't have won any championships.
No. For sure we would have won a lot. I mean,
After the Zalgiris game, you play in the first, what is the first, since this is our 20th anniversary edition here, you play in the first actual EuroLeague Final Four, finals, I should say.
In 2001,
right.
Yes.
Because this was not the typical final.
No, it was a series.
Yeah, it was a 5-game series to get into it.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to touch on Bologna. To me, it was the most amazing town in all of Europe for basketball. Between
in those years,
teams.
Yes.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
You played the semifinal against which was Buckler when I played against him that night, but it's PAF, I guess PAF.
Yes, yes.
What was that like for the town, for the city? That must have been amazing.
Well, it was even more complicated, more passionate, more crazier, I would say, in 98 when we played the final series for the national championship, five games.
Was that the one when Dominique
got
the foul at the
That's
end
exactly
of the
right.
four-point play?
That's exactly right. And in the same season, we beat them 2-0 to go to Barcelona to the Final Four, the EuroLeague Final Four, and that we won eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So that series was crazy. Dominic Wilkins, Rivers, and so many great players. So in 2001, we played them, but they had won the national championship the year before.
Right.
And that season, for some whatever reason, they were not as good as they were.
Yeah, because you swept them 3-0.
Yeah, we swept them 3-0, and we also swept them 3-0 in the national finals for the Italian league. So they were not the same.
You played the final against Talisar Amiga, and you've already played a Final Four situation. This is your first time playing a championship other than the Italian league,
yes,
as a five-game series. Yeah. Is there any difference as a coach?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For the Euro League final?
I think that, first of all, I'm a big fan of the playoff system. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's why the Euro League is the hardest competition in the world, because you go from regular season to a playoff to make the Final Four, and then it's a
do or die. Then it's two games.
It's, you know, you have a bad game, you waste.
I mean, look at Fenerbahce last year. They showed up, everybody was hurt.
That's exactly right.
Best season.
And you waste millions and effort, desire, whatever. So,
but it's also, excuse me to cut you off, it's also the most exciting part of it too.
I agree.
You know,
just as a coach, and I think as a player, it's just cruel. I think. And I understand for the fans or for whatever, mm-hmm. it's beautiful. So, but that year, that series was followed everywhere. I remember we had people, journalists coming from South America because of all the Argentinians, mm-hmm. that were playing.
Right, of course.
It was an amazing series. And just to go back to what you just said, an injury or whatever, that series, we play game one without Rashard Griffith, who was injured.
Okay.
And we lost the first game.
Right, you lost the first
game.
But
because he's a series, we had the time to get him back.
Exactly.
And recover and eventually win. If that was a semifinal in a Final Four,
you're done
because you missed one of your two best players. So
The interesting thing about that, I was looking at the dates and everything, and I do my work before I sit down.
You've done a great job. I'm really impressed. Seriously, I'm really impressed.
April 17th and 19th were game one and two. And games three and four were played 12 days later.
And do you know the funny story? In that gap, there was the final eight of the Italy Cup.
You're kidding me.
Yes.
I was going to ask, my question was, were there any Italian league games, or did they give you
the
that
final
time?
Eight of the Italy Cup.
During that?
Sure.
What, that I guess it's days. An eight-day, nine-day period.
Yeah. And I can tell you a true story. We had an owner who had invested tons of money, of course, for us, like all the owners that build
right.
a team, okay. So, but the guy had no experience in sports. So, after the first two games, we're facing this week when we have the Italy Cup, and he asked to talk to the team, and very politely, because he was a very calm man, comes in and say, "Look, guys, now we're going to Forlì for the Italy Cup, and the most important thing is nobody gets hurt, because we have the playoff of the EuroLeague next week." So basically taking away every importance to the fan. So to tell you the truth, after that, the following day, we had a kind of secret meeting with the players. And I asked them, Manu, Rashard, Antoine, I said, "Guys, what you want to do? I mean, we go there to win or we go there?" And they all said, no, we want to try to win the cup because we haven't won anything.
Okay.
And after a scary first game that we win in overtime, we won the other two games by 20, and we won the Italy Cup. And I think that was very important to lift our team. But, you know, that was just a story to say, not that the owner was dumb, but to say how people from outside see.
Right.
And, you know, I think normal people would say, "Hey, you better save your legs because you have that game." But as a player,
you can't do that.
Exactly. You can't. You want to compete. You want to be there.
I know they talk about it a lot of times in the NBA. Even now this year in American football, there's that you know, let's tank and let's lose. And you know, you can't, especially in American football, a player can't go out and try to lose a game. You get killed.
That's exactly right. I can't imagine that you don't play tough enough.
Yeah. Right?
Because you don't play tough, you're done.
It's amazing. Did you realize, I'm sure you didn't at the time, this might be a dumb question, but
no.
But we all realize it now. Did you realize how the importance that would have being the first EuroLeague winner? Did you think like the league would go on to 20 years and this would be the 20th anniversary?
No, I didn't think about that.
But now looking back, you see the...
I don't know if it was important, but it's a nice memory.
It's a good memory.
Yeah, I mean,
as all awards are.
Sure, sure, and it's like the EuroLeague has done a lot of little important things that for coaches and players. I think even when they did that celebration in 2008 for the 50 years, you know, those are small big things that for you, it's nothing really, really big, but at the end of your career, you turn back and you say, "Hey, I was there, you know, that was the first time that we played the new cold EuroLeague and we won it. You know,
It's
memories.
You don't think about it at the moment, but it's definitely something that comes up. The following year, you have another great year, and the format's changed now. Now there's the top 16, where the first place team in each group.
Yes, go to the Final Four.
Yeah, that's got to be even more pressure because it's a six game playoff against three different teams essentially.
That's exactly right.
And you
like schedule is very important.
Right.
Schedule is very important.
When you have that home and away.
That's exactly right. Point difference. Every possession is so important because you might be out of the look.
Two teams were out of the Final Four because they ended up in a tie head to head.
And true story, I was in Treviso, my second season, and we are in a tremendous group. In the top 16 with Panathinaikos, Siena and Barcelona, okay? Barcelona reigning champion. Mm-hmm. In the top 16, we beat them twice, okay? And we stay out of the Final Four for point spread.
Right.
Because in the last game, Panathinaikos, who is already eliminated, okay, loses at home with Siena.
Right.
Okay. And because of the point standings that come out with the points difference, we stay out of the Final Four after beating twice the reigning champion.
Yeah. So sometimes you don't even control your own destiny.
No. I mean that was really hard. That top 16 was very, very hard
because of the group, of course.
Yes. Yeah. But I mean the competition going through the top 16, I think, was very, very tough.
Do you have one of those coaching memories that you remember almost everything, like plays and
you know what? You almost remember only the bad ones.
That was my next question. And that's the question I asked because me as an ex-player, I remember more vividly the games that I lost, the big games that I lost, than I did the ones that I won.
That's exactly right.
And people can ask me questions, and I'll always remember things of the losses. But in the games that I won, I'm like, all I remember is like celebrating afterwards, and it was all forgotten about.
But that's exactly right. You're right on the money. Yes.
How hard was the next year? You go out, you get to the Final Four, and it's at home,
and we lose at home. It was very hard.
You win the semifinal.
The worst part is that, as you say, we won the semifinal against a very good Benetton team, where, by the way, Mike D'Antoni was having that team playing like his teams in the NBA. Right. So very fast, a lot of threes, blah, blah, blah. A great team, great team. They won the national championship in Italy that year, playing tremendous basketball. And we had lost twice in the league with them, but we managed to win that game. So we're in the final. The worst part is that with 2 minutes to go in the first half, we're up 16.
Yeah, I was going right there with and, you. You're bringing me there.
No, we didn't finish well the half, and I think we were up 10. Mm-hmm. And then they come back, the game become close. We miss a few free throws down the stretch. They hit a big shot with Kutlai, and they deservedly won. Mm-hmm. And painful, extremely painful.
That was an amazing amazing final because you were 41 at the time.
Yeah.
You're in your fourth final in five seasons, I think.
I think so,
something like that. Four and six or something like that, whatever. It was amazing. You had Selko, who was 40 at the time, one year younger than you.
Yeah.
And he's already had four titles.
Yes.
I think maybe at the moment it was huge, but now looking back, it's amazing.
And Coach Blatt was there.
Coach Blatt,
I think, was there with Maccabi.
Oh, that's right. He was with Maccabi in the Final Four.
And Mike D'Antoni, future Hall of Famer, was there coaching Treviso. There were tremendous players
were just
on all four teams. Yeah. Yes.
How hard is it to lose that game at home? If I'm not mistaken, I think you're the only team to lose the final game on the home court.
I have this nice record, yes.
No, you got to listen. You got a lot of really good ones, so don't complain about one bad one.
There is also CSKA, who lost the semifinal the year before I went there.
Right.
You remember after being undefeated almost all year, if you remember, was. I mean, I can just tell you, it's still painful after 20 years. It's awful. No, not bad. It's. You have all your families there and friends and your fans. You feel you let down everybody. You feel guilty. You feel awful. And like Coach Pop says, I mean, then you move on because this is life.
Right.
This is basketball. And there are other things that are much more
Another game tomorrow.
whatever. But still, it's bad.
Yeah, well, the two questions I have, number one is, as a coach, I've never had this experience before. As a coach, is there that that moment when you lay down in bed and you close your eyes and you're like, if I would have done this,
of course,
you know, if I would have made this change, if I would have, like, you know.
Joe, I knew very few people that are so stubborn to say, I did it right and the players didn't do well. So as a coach, you always question yourself, you always doubt yourself, you always think, I should have done this, I should have done that. That's the bad part. And when they ask me the difference between, and I've not been a player, but I think that as a player, you are fully entitled in just taking shower and think about the following day,
right,
and being mad at coach who didn't play you, or being mad at coach because he took the wrong decision or whatever. And you as a coach, you're by yourself.
Yeah.
And nobody's there.
Yeah, okay? You have no one to sit down in the hotel room and talk to.
That's exactly. It's not fun. It's not fun.
And the other question I had about that was you have to go and play the Italian league after this.
Yeah.
How hard is it to remotivate?
We didn't recover. I tell you straight. We did not recover.
You did it the next year in Benetton.
That was outstanding, believe me. But that's one of the greatest memories I have in my basketball career, not for the result, but for the process.
After you lost the Final Four in Benetton.
For the interaction with the players and whatever. We come back. Well, first of all, let me put in perspective. That year in Benetton, I think we overachieved. We made the Final Four, and we made the final game in Barcelona.
But you had a great season also along the way.
We won everything in Italy.
Yeah.
We won everything. Super Cup, Italy Cup, regular season, mm-hmm. losing four games. And then we have the Final Four, and we lose the final game. And that was a dream for us because we got very close. But, you know, I mean, they were a great team, amazing team. Okay, so we come back, and after 2 days, we play the Italian League playoffs, the quarterfinals.
Two days later.
I swear. I mean, it was, if it's not two, it was at the most three. I mean, we lost the Final Four, I don't know, Sunday, and probably Wednesday we played, okay? So we lose immediately game one with Reggio Calabria. Then we go there, it was 1-1. So in 3 days, we're 0-2. We're 0-2. And... you know, and I had great players. Tyus and Trajan Langdon, more important, Jorge Carbajosa and Marcelo Nicola and Dennis Marco, blah, 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 blah. I mean, these people just stick together and we came back. We won three in a row. I think it was the only time that happened, and we made it to the final series and we won the national championship. But believe me, we were devastated after losing the final game in the Final Four because we had convinced ourselves that we could really win it.
Right.
Because during the year, we started a little bit as an underdog. And then boom, 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 boom. We were playing well. We were at great chemistry. The players were amazing. My goodness, we go to the game. It was a tough game. And Ricardo Pittis makes three quick fouls. So we play without him, blah, 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 blah. And so Barcelona is better, and they beat us. But we felt like, oh my goodness, the dream, like a crystal ball that breaks.
Right.
And to come back from that.
The Cinderella story.
But those players, I think, were amazing in coming back.
Plus, as a coach, it's your first year, which is not always easy to do, to make that transition and bring a team there.
And well, you know what? I took over after Mike D'Antoni.
You changed the style of play.
A little bit. We tried to adjust because, we were still shooting threes and whatever. We balanced it a little bit more, using a little bit more Pittis in the post and Marconato, whatever. But at the end of the day, the pick and pop of Garbajosa and Marcelo Nicola was the biggest part of our package. But, we changed a little bit. I mean, it was not easy. I was going to another city, another organization, after a great coach who had success. So, I mean, I'm
leaving the place that you've known your whole life.
But I'm still, believe me, years after years, I still remember that season like an unbelievable season. Yeah, really.
I think you might have answered my question for me already, but is it harder to remotivate the team after winning the Final Four? Because you've done both.
Yeah.
You've won the Final Four and you went on to play the Italian League, and you've lost the Final Four and went to play the Final League.
I think, of course, it's much easier after a win.
It's much easier after a win because you got that feeling of...
Yes. Yes.
But isn't it like that letdown also?
Yes.
You have that letdown. Because you have to, as a coach, it's not about the X's and O's anymore. It's about the mental.
A lot, yes. The mental part.
Mental
yes, I agree with you.
Then you leave there after a couple more years and you go to Moscow.
Yeah.
And I know you have lunch. You got a game tonight. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. So I'm going to try to get through this as quick as we can. I'm going to put all the 4 years of Moscow together, together. You won two, you lost two.
Yeah.
The first one, I know, when you arrive, it's a new team, a new country, and you win the Triple Crown. You're getting good at going places and doing it right off the bat.
Yeah. It just didn't happen in Madrid, unfortunately.
We don't want to talk about that right now.
That's life. That's life.
The thing that I wanted to talk to you about, though, and you and I talked about Coach Popovich earlier in the unfortunate thing with his wife that happened last year. You also had, I mean, nothing compared to that, but you had an incident with your son before that first Final Four, right?
Yeah, my son was in the hospital.
You flew in the day before, I believe, from what
As
I understand.
Always, yes. And I'm at practice, and my son got this febrile seizure because he had a very high temperature for something that we found out later was a viral infection. Mm-hmm. So he starts shaking everything, and the doctor...
This happened on the way to
Prague? In the hotel when I was doing practice. We were already in Prague.
Okay.
So, by the way, the doctors of Maccabi Tel Aviv were the people who helped immediately and stopped all this shaking or whatever. Everybody was scared like crazy. But the problem was not that, because a lot of kids have febrile seizure, as you know better than me. The problem was that this viral infection that he had, that he got. By the way, we stayed 5 more days after the Final Four.
After the Final Four.
He stayed in the hospital for almost 8-9 days before we
really?
Could fly home. Yeah. And he was two years old.
2 years old. How much did that take you away from your responsibility?
I still remember that I was like into a bubble. You know, I was not thinking nothing. I was boom, boom. My wife was amazing because she took all the load of this. And my assistants and my players. But that group of people with the veteran players that we had, with Sergei Kushenko as a president, Vera Vakulenko as a gentleman, they were amazing people. They were, I honestly just coached the game, but a lot of people deserve a lot of credit,
I read that you give a lot of credit to your staff and everybody.
They were amazing.
You were just not really there. You were just physically there, more than mentally there.
Or, you know, when it was at the moment of the game, you just tried to switch off and forget everything.
Right.
And it was a weird thing.
One thing is to switch off a bad day. Another thing is to switch off your son, two years old.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And the hardest part about this is you're in a club now that hasn't won in 35 years, plus they've lost 3 years in a row.
Joe, I've never seen happiness at that level, like after the game.
I
was so happy for them, not only for myself, but for them, because I've never experienced being part of something like that.
It was 35 years?
35 years, and the people, I mean, they were so happy that, I mean, it was just fun. It was just fun. And that... We were really underdog because Maccabi, even if they had lost the Yasiskevicius, they had won 2 years in a row. They could
have gone. The day before,
they routed Tau Vittoria, which was a very good team.
Right.
They just went over them, boom, like this. So we thought, how can we win? But I had people like Papa Lucas and all the others, Matias, JR, right? They were so mentally tough. And we lost David Anderson during the year.
Right.
The interesting part of that was that to substitute David, who was a great scorer, we signed Thomas van der Spiegel, who was a pick-and-roll player. So we went from being a heavy post-up team into being a heavy pick-and-roll team because of Theo Papaloukas. Mm-hmm. And Theo really blossomed even more, and he was amazing. He helped us a lot to get to this.
He told me a story one year that you pulled that. It was the second year you won while you were there, the second tournament, your third year.
Uh-huh.
That you pulled him in and you said, hey, you know, the game has changed a little bit and, you know, the matchup is going to be a little bit different. I'm not going to count on you so much in this game. Is that a true story? Or did he just tell me that story?
Honestly, I don't remember this.
You don't remember that? I'm going to have to talk to him about that.
No, I don't remember.
I have to go back and listen to the crossover.
No.
Listen to what he said.
No.
Yeah.
A true story with Theo is that one year he was, because he was always playing in the summer with the national team, and he was always going through the motion in the Russian league for a while. Okay.
Right.
So one day I was mad with him in a game, and I told him in the halftime, I said, Theo, do you want to, you know, start playing and do something for us? He looked at me with this green, you know, funny green, and he goes, Coach, I'll be ready from January. You know that.
Yeah. So I think you might have told me that also.
Know, and he was right. He was right. But as a coach, you know, you don't like that.
You want him today.
Yeah.
Was the first one in CSKA 3 years that they were in the finals? Yeah. They didn't even get to the finals. They got to the final four only. Yes. They lost in the semis. Right. Yeah. 35 years without a title. Yeah. And your son being sick in the hospital. Was that
the year that legendary Gomelski had passed away?
And So was that the sweetest of all of them? You have so many to weigh in.
You don't want to make a standings because the first time is the first time because the second. But that was very special. Yeah, let's put it like this.
I have to very think special. Just because of the on the club level, on a personal level for you,
yes.
on a family level.
It was
level.
A combination, yes. It was a combination of very, very important moments. Yeah.
You went to I'm trying to jump ahead because I know you're in a hurry. Went to Los Angeles for a year as a consultant. You spent some great years under Popovich. I'm not going to get too much into the American thing.
Yeah, sure.
But one thing I've read about you, and knowing that your personality and your attitude, you're an extremely nice guy, but you got your personality like all coaches do. How hard was it for you to become an assistant coach?
No,
to make that adjustment.
Listen, it happened at a moment that I wanted to do something different, and I knew that they were very special as an organization, and. Let's say all of us, we have things that we consider important in terms of how you relate, how you live the sport, how you live your life. Mm-hmm. And to me, the way they were doing things had always attracted me a lot. So being there and, was very, very important. The other thing is it was a great experience for my son and for us as a family.
Everybody went with you?
My son basically became American.
Okay.
He went for 5 years from last year of primary school, middle school, high school.
Okay.
So, we got the green card. We are in the process to become citizen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
Donald Trump's not holding you back on that one?
He's probably doing a wall for other people, not for us. Okay. So it was very, very special. And also, you will probably think I'm crazy, but I always loved doing practices. Mm-hmm. And I've enjoyed very few games in my life because the game is always like an exam, let's see if you did everything right. Mm-hmm. So as an assistant, I really enjoyed 5 years the games, mm-hmm.
So it kind of took you... out of it a little bit.
Yes, I really enjoyed it. And I also had the opportunity to coach overall probably 10 games when he was ejected or he was, unfortunately, what happened with his wife. Yeah. So I also had the possibility to experience how it is driving a car in that very, very fast race because the game in the NBA is so fast.
Very different.
That even as a coach, it's completely different. It's not worse or better. It's just very different.
One of my questions is to ask you the differences, but it's unexplainable.
We need another hour.
another hour.
The only thing we can say, and you know better than me, decision have to happen so fast that it's always boom, 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 boom. You miss a substitution or you miss a matchup or you miss a mismatch to use, and the game just slips out of your hands.
Yeah.
And
it's amazing.
Coming out with the right play every time out and whatever. It's the other thing is that there is not the sense of drama that we have in Europe in every game and every possession. So even in the playoffs, you can really enjoy the games. But that's another story. So it was a unique experience. I was lucky.
You said in 2013 when you returned to CSKA and you went to the Final Four in, was it London, I think?
London.
That everyone is special for you now because you've always said, I never know when I'm going to get back. And I think everybody should. When I speak to players that are going for the first time, I always say, like, look, enjoy this like it's your last
one. That's absolutely
You never know.
That's absolutely right.
You haven't been back since 2013 for the circumstances that you haven't been here.
Yes.
Obviously, it's a big goal for you, but what would it mean to you to take this Milan team over?
I don't think about that for one simple reason, because you got to be realistic. Our goal is to make the playoff. If we make the playoff, we'll be very, very, very happy. Okay. Now, that we would love to be a contender for the Final Four in these 3 years, if they don't fire me earlier, that's another story. And of course, if in 3 years we could be in the Final Four, that would be an amazing accomplishment.
You just mentioned something about being fired earlier. One of my questions to you is you see guys like Selko, like Pablo Laso, and Dimitris Itoudis and CSKA.
Yeah.
it's so important, I think, I've always said this for years, to have continuity on the bench.
Sure.
And so many teams do not have the patience to, because they're so result driven. We live in a world now that, you know, you can pick up a, you pick up Google and you can find anything you want in 10
seconds.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. That's probably why it's a good idea to start thinking retiring.
No. You got a little bit of time left to go before this.
There you go.
The one question I love to ask is, because you've been through it all now, the game has changed a lot, since you've first started to coach, and everybody kind of knows the changes. But internally, I want to know how the players have changed, because it used to be when I played that the coach was king, he was the boss, and it seems like that shifted a little bit. There's a little bit more power towards the player now, no matter where you are, even in Europe.
I'll put it like this: in these days, I think it's much more important how you build a team than how you coach the team.
Mm-hmm.
I think in terms of coaching the team, relationship and players taking ownership is becoming more and more important, I think.
Because when you're building a team, you're building the players that you want to coach.
Well, no, because not necessarily. You must be clever and lucky most of the times to get right people. People mm-hmm. that fit, people that can develop a chemistry. People that, regardless how good they are, basketball-wise, if they don't click together, you have a huge problem. And I think relationships have always been important, but now are become even more important. Practice time is much, much less. Mm-hmm. So to have people who can prepare themselves, not necessarily on the court, but maybe with a video, mm-hmm. with a couple of clips, and be mentally strong, I think it's very, very important.
So it's a different type of player in many aspects, not only physical, but the
before you can ask a player a lot of repetition to prepare for a game. Mm-hmm. Now you can't.
Right.
Because the game is, you know, too many games.
Not much time.
Yes, exactly. So you need, it's more a mental preparation than a preparation on the court, I think.
That kind of goes with your quote that I want to bring up. A manager's biggest achievement is getting a team to follow the rules without forcing them.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying? Because,
yes.
Because I think many years ago, the rules were forced upon players.
Well, I can tell you, I still get mad if the rules are not respected, and I can become a pain in the butt. I tell you, I know I'm not Mr. Nice Guy. I know I try to be, especially after being with Popovich, but not all the time it happens to be. Sometimes still things drive me crazy.
People from the outside looking in don't think he's Mr. Nice Guy.
He really is, believe me.
I know. I've had the pleasure to meet him.
Believe me, he's really, and he's a unique person in terms of caring about his players mm-hmm. as people.
I think that's been the key to his success.
I agree.
People have stayed so long with him.
I agree with you. That's exactly right.
I'm sure Tim Duncan had many offers to go leaving, and Manu also had many
Absolutely.
Offers to go leaving
for much more money.
And
yes.
they decided to stay.
Yeah.
But how do you do that? How do you make someone follow the rules without actually enforcing them?
Well, I think you really need people in your team who does that for you. I think in great teams, players hold players accountable, not coaches.
Mm-hmm.
In the average teams, you as a coach can bitch, moan, yell, and bench people, but that's not gonna work.
Right.
It's
especially in today's day.
In today's days, you have a teammate that looks in your eyes and says, hey, this is not gonna work. You gotta do this, this, and this for us to win. It's much more important than whatever coach can say.
Look, I just want to thank you so much.
No, thank
There's
you
so many
time.
More things that I could ask you. And
thank you for your
about,
time. And I go see my team now.
Yeah. Go see team. Have a lunch.
Thank you so much.
And I hope, I have it lucky. Right? I'm easy right now. I got the easiest road to the Final Four ever. You know, as long as I keep doing my good work in EuroLeague, they bring me to the Final Four every year.
That's great.
Hopefully, sooner or later, I'm going to see you in your 10th.
Well, hopefully. We'll see.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you
Appreciate
so much.
It.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode, and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.